So is the Republican Party steering itself toward demographic oblivion? New York Magazine political reporter Jonathan Chait thinks it probably is, and last night's primary results could be another indication. Mitt Romney, by the way, is here today. Did you know that? He may have been seeking votes this week in Alabama and Mississippi, but he is seeking money at the Waldorf Astoria. Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine joins us now. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you.
So in the March 5th edition, you wrote an article called 2012 or Never about a Republican belief that this could be their last chance to stop America from a future it sees as disastrous. We'll play a Rick Santorum clip in a minute that I think exemplifies it. You refer to it in the article. But sum it up first. What is that vision?
Well, the Republicans, I think, demographically have perceived, in some cases at a gut level, in some cases in a more strategic direct sense, that America is changing in a way that's hostile to them. And mostly this is demographic, that Obama came to power as the head of a coalition that was younger, browner, and just different in many ways than the familiar America that they were comfortable with. And they came to see this coalition as not only ascendant, which it is, but also organized to essentially take resources from them and redistribute it to themselves. So this created a tremendous fear and a sense among Republicans that there was a pressure on them to act fast. And part of the acting fast rationale is the true sense that they were afforded by the economic crisis a one-time opportunity, because you know this crisis gave them a huge midterm victory in 2010, and it could easily spill over into 2012 and give them a presidential victory, and so gives them sort of a one chance to kind of stop this rising tide they see coming after them to change America the way they want to change it back, or to restore what they see as the greatness of America before the slow sort of demographic tide overwhelms them and forces them to adjust to it and change their politics.
So demographically, as your article reminds us, Obama won not only among the black and the brown and the Asian, but also he won the under 45 vote. McCain won the over 45 vote. And right. Republicans see the seeds of disaster long term in that combination. So how does that translate to policy? Well, let me play this clip of Rick Santorum that you quote in the article. This is 44 seconds from a speech last month in Idaho.
We're reaching a tipping point, folks. When those who pay are the minority, and those who receive are the majority. Freedom in election process is not something people will care about. They'll care about whether they get their piece. This is what it's all designed to do. Gradually, slowly erode your freedom and increase your dependency on government. That's why this election is the most important election in your lifetime. This is a chance for Americans to stand up and say, we will be free.
That is some dark, apocalyptic vision of America, especially working class America, Jonathan. Want to expand on what he's talking about?
Right. Well, let's see. There's a lot of pieces that are composed here in this vision. One way to look at it is that there's some research that suggests that something called ethnocentrism, which is sort of the degree to which you relate to and want to defend your ethnic group against other ethnic groups, is highly correlated with a couple ideas that have been part of the Republican campaign. Ethnocentrism is highly correlated with opposition to any kind of means-tested government benefit, something that goes to people who are poor, right, like Medicaid, food stamps, et cetera. The more ethnocentric you are, even controlling for your ideology, your partisanship or whatever, your income, the more ethnocentric you are, the more you oppose giving money to poor people. On the other hand, the more ethnocentric you are, the more you actually favor universal programs like Medicare and Social Security. So when you look at the ideology of the Tea Party, one of the ways it comes together is the sense that their earned legitimate benefits like Medicare are being taken away and given away to these younger people in the form of unearned benefits. The biggest example, of course, being the health care bill, right, covering the uninsured. They're taking away their Medicare and giving it to these uninsured people who should be getting their own health insurance. But you know, other groups that have kind of fallen into this rubric include illegal immigrants, which is like a major obsession of the Tea Party, young people. So you've had, for instance, a very interesting speech by Mitt Romney the other week where a college student asked him, what are you going to do to help me? And Romney really kind of lashed out at the guy and sort of treated him like the way Republicans often treat, you know, people on welfare. Like, you know, no, you moocher, take care of your own college. Well, I'm not paying for it. Don't look for a handout, you bum. It was a surprisingly harsh message, but it was very much in keeping with this idea that, like, no, you young people are trying to take our money away. At the same time, Romney has been attacking Obama for cutting Medicare. So it's not a consistent across-the-board anti-government message. It's a sense that those people are organizing politically to take our money away from us, and we need to defend ourselves against them.
Listeners, any comments or questions either about this ideology of maker versus taker in our society, apocalypse as articulated by Rick Santorum at a policy level in that clip, or on the demographic political analysis that the Republicans are taking this sort of all or nothing, us versus them approach as a way of fending off or at least delaying the demographically inevitable, their decline based on who they represent in our political society. 212-433-WNYC for Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine. 212-433-9692. Or you can post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. But let me dive down a little bit deeper on the politics of what you were saying. Because if you go back to the beginning of the Santorum clip, he says, we're reaching a tipping point, folks, when those who pay are the minority and those who receive are the majority. How does that really work for Santorum or any Republican politically? If he's referring to the bottom 47% of earners who owe no income tax, which might be the implied stat there, some of them qualifying for government benefits, aren't many of those exactly the same people he needs to court as his voters, as he tries to make himself out to be the candidate of the working class?
Yes, and that's an interesting contradiction, but I don't think his voters really see themselves that way. Because part of it, that stat relies upon a trick, basically, which is that 47% of the voters pay no federal income tax, but they pay federal payroll tax, and they pay state and local taxes. And people almost generally do not distinguish between the different kinds of taxes they pay. So they think of themselves as taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
So in their mind, when Santorum's talking about the people who aren't paying taxes, they're not thinking of themselves, even if many of them actually are.
And you, well, let's go right to a caller. How about Neil in Brooklyn? You're on WNYC. Hi, Neil.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I'm wondering, with all of this, how a GOP win of some kind, presidential or Senate in 2012, or even in the next set of midterm elections, is meant to stave off the seemingly inevitable demographic shift that we're talking about amongst younger voters and minorities?
That's a great question. I think the way they've conceived of their general approach is to take the most aggressive possible political and policy stance that they can take. So they've taken a real all-or-nothing stance toward Obama, refusing to cut deals on a host of issues where he was looking to cut deals on the budget and health care, and especially in this embrace of the Paul Ryan plan, which is a budget plan for tax cuts, privatization of Medicare, enormous reductions in spending on the poor, deregulation of Wall Street, and just a very wide-ranging enactment of the Republican agenda. So this idea that they can, you know, first of all, like, must stage a maximal confrontation with Obama, and then parlay everything into a victory in 2012, which they can just get everything done at once. So, you know, even if they don't get total victory, they can move move the goalposts as far in the direction as they possibly can to kind of before they have to give in and start compromising later on.
So you see this, and Neil, thank you for your call, as consistent with the choice that the GOP has made for decades, really, to be the party of heartland identity politics, as you call it, and you pretty much say the party of white people. So explain the connection between Santorum's income tax analysis, and which sounds, you know, economic, and
right.
this racial or cultural identity politics.
Right. I think there's a lot of research, and I was alluding to it earlier, shows that a lot of these things are actually connected, even though intellectually these ideas are totally separate. The way they reach voters is the same, the kind of ethnocentric us versus them appeal that I reference in the piece Theda Scotch Paul's research on the Tea Party, which shows that they see themselves as beset by people who are in many ways unlike them and are trying to take their money. So these younger voters at the heart of the Obama coalition are more heavily non-white, and more and the whites are more likely to be college educated. So they're basically it's an identity of white and more disproportionately non-college educated voters who see this younger coalition, and I say they see it, they see the fight as conducting itself largely in economic terms, even though it's a social difference mm-hmm. between them. They see the terms of the fight as these younger voters taking their money, using the power of the state to expropriate their money, taking money away from them and redistributing it to themselves.
So you see the disparate strands of conservative ideology that might seem to have nothing to do with each other tied to this cultural identity. Low taxes on the rich, war against Iraq, being for that, skepticism over climate science, you even include, unrelated
right.
on the surface, but underneath
right.
all from the same stew of racial, religious, cultural, and national identity. But there's such a polarized vision of America in this framing that Santorum does there. Paul Ryan, the head of the budget committee in his budget, does the same thing. The makers in society in the U.S. versus the takers. And more there are the takers. And we, the makers, have to protect ourselves against this rising tide of takers. Because at the same time, there seems to be a lot of political juice behind the liberal belief that the Americans not carrying their weight are the top 1%, that they're the takers, or at least those who are not contributing their fair share. So we have a very polarized vision of who's giving and who's taking in America today.
No, that's absolutely right. And there's been a general rising level of polarization for a couple decades. But, you know, I guess one of the underlying factors that I tried to identify is that the demographic changes in the country have developed in such a way in recent years where I think Democrats have started to gain an upper hand. Now, to gain an upper hand doesn't mean that you always win. Short-term fluctuations are often far more important than longer-term changes in the landscape, and I've kind of analogized this almost to the weather, where you could say over the next 2 months it will slowly get warmer, where, you know, every week the average temperature will on average be 1 degree hotter. But it can easily, in any given day or any given week, move sharply in the opposite direction. And that's kind of what you had in 2010. You had a longer-term demographic shift towards the Democrats that's been in the works, but you also had this huge economic crisis, which was like, you know, a massive cold spell that pushed things pretty far in the opposite direction in 2010, and could easily have the same effect in 2012.
We're talking with Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine. He wrote an article called 2012 or Never about a Republican belief that this could be their last chance politically to stop America from a future that they see as disastrous. But Rita in Manhattan, not so convinced that this is the Republicans' last demographic stand, right?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First place, I'm pretty progressive myself. I'm from an Irish Catholic family, and I've seen the change in my family from two generations ago, Democratic down the line, to getting people getting their own businesses, getting in, you know, getting more of a stake, and becoming more conservative. So that's number one. I think that will happen with other immigrant groups, and that it's very dangerous for progressives, liberals, Democrats to feel at all complacent that demographics will win the day for us. We have to have smart policies that support business as well as social justice. And so I think that's a really important thing for us to consider and not at all rely on demographics or youth. On the youth side, we're an aging population. So I just wanted to put those two comments out there and get some response and discussion.
Rita, I'm really glad you did. And one of the questions that I was going to ask Jonathan anyway has to do with this very thing. You know who Sean Trendy is, Jonathan?
Yes.
He's Real Clear Politics elections analyst, and
yep.
He has a new book that he was on the show for recently about neither party having a majority coalition demographically. And one of his arguments is what Rita just said. As people get older, they tend to get more conservative because they have more resources to protect. And he also says as Latinos and Asians become more economically successful, if their trend lines follow previous immigrant groups like the Irish and the Italians, their top 30% or whatever are going to have resources to protect. They'll become tax averse. They'll see lower income earners as leeches on their success, and they'll vote Republican just like other wealthier Americans tend to do. So demographics, as we see them now, definitely are not political destiny.
Definitely not. I mean, there's no such thing as absolute destiny, and you never know what's going to happen in the future. And as the caller notes, how the parties govern makes a huge difference. You know, a series of governing disasters under Democratic presidents will change the way people think about the parties. But for the same reason, she says, people tend to get fixed voting habits at a relatively young age and keep those habits. That different generations who have come of age under different eras have voted differently, that the Reagan generation was more conservative than the Roosevelt generation. So it seems likely that a lot of the younger voters who have picked up their voting habits now will maintain those loyalties more or less, and that there isn't any detectable general tendency for people to become more conservative as they get older. Now, as for non-white voters, I think that's probably true to an extent, and that's a point that Trendy has made, that as they get more wealthy, they'll get more conservative. But a couple of things you have to keep in mind. Number one, the growth of the non-white vote, especially the Latino and Asian votes, is so large that Republicans need to have a steadily growing share just to stay even, that a growing share doesn't make things better for them. It's just treading water. And what we've seen in the last election cycles is not growth, but the reverse of growth, that Latino voters seem to be getting more hostile to the Republican Party. And the danger for them is that a lot of these voters will get ingrained voting habits and just come to see the Republican Party as hostile to their interests, and that they'll essentially get used to thinking themselves as Democrats. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Latino vote went two-thirds to the Democrats in 08 stayed fairly heavily Democratic even in the midterm elections when everything swung to the Republicans. And polls now show overwhelming hostility to the Republican Party among Latinos. I think the last poll I saw, a Univision poll, I think said like 14% of Republicans were planning to vote. Of Latinos were planning to vote for Mitt Romney. Now he'll bump that up, but he needs to get up into the 40s. Mm-hmm. And when you're at 14%, that's a real problem. So I don't see any evidence of this happening yet at all.
Right. Interesting. All right, Rita, you raise a great point though, and something to keep our eyes on demographically over the next few years, I would say, and see if the Republican Party changes any of its positions with respect to immigration or anything else that may court Latinos especially. We've just got a minute left. I wonder if you have a quick thought as a New York Magazine political reporter on Mitt Romney coming to New York today to shake the money tree. Are the Romney donors in New York of a particular type? Do you know?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
I was just asking.
That's a question for your audience.
No, it's for you. Just before you go, if you have any thought as a New York Magazine political reporter on Mitt Romney coming to New York today to shake the money tree and who those donors might be or the importance of New York, of all places, to the Republican race.
Yeah, he's invested heavily in Wall Street and vice versa. He's got a huge resource edge over Rick Santorum, and that's a major source of his strength.
Thank you very much, Jonathan Chait from New York Magazine, and his article on 2012 as a last desperate all-or-nothing stand, as some Republicans see it, both philosophically and politically. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we're going to talk about college graduates relegated to careers in the service sector. And if this sounds like you, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll talk to Nona Willis-Aronowitz from Good Magazine, who did an article on this, and we'll take calls from college grads now working unexpectedly in the service sector, 212-433-9692.